I'm a small government conservative, right? Constitutional conservative. And I really do believe in the state's rights. And if there are particular issues where they feel that they must step up, they should. But AI is, as you said, I mean, it's not just interstate commerce. This is global. Well, being one of the younger members in Congress today, out of 435, I think I'm not the youngest, but I think third youngest. You know, I think I bring the average age in the United States House of Representatives down by I think an average of 25 years. It's no surprise that I'm very much a supporter of President Trump and his policies. And what I had seen out of the previous administration under President Biden was an arbitrary executive order that basically scared all of the AI community. The emerging tech space is very exciting. It's the new frontier. And it's not just AI, right? It's quantum, it's hypersonics, it's nanotech, it's AR, it's VR, it's so many things.
Welcome to the Regulating AI Podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
Welcome to the Regulating AI Podcast, the show dedicated to shaping AI policy framework by engaging with policymakers from around the globe. I am your host, Sanjay Puri. Today, I have the distinct honor of hosting Congresswoman Kat Kamak, who represents Florida's 3rd Congressional District and has been an influential advocate for individual freedoms, small businesses, and national security. Serving as one of the youngest Republican women in Congress, she chairs the RSC's Emerging Technologies Task Force. Join us as we discuss critical issues in AI policy, national security, and more. Congresswoman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, and it's good to see you again.
Awesome. Congresswoman, we have a global audience of AI experts, policymakers, AI entrepreneurs. One of the questions that came in was that what inspired your initial interest in technology policy, particularly AI?
Well, being one of the younger members in Congress today, out of 435, I think I'm not the youngest, but I think third youngest. You know, I think I bring the average age in the United States House of Representatives down by I think an average of 25 years. So I'm 37 and, you know, have been working in the government space for a bit and have always noticed that government has been exceptionally reactive, always chasing a problem rather than trying to help facilitate development of technology. And, you know, being somebody who was born in 1988, I grew up in an era that was still analog, but coming into the digital age. And so I kind of speak both languages, had a MySpace, you know, and we talk about how, you know, we've watched the evolution of social media, but then the app market and all the things that come with that. It's important that we have legislators at the highest level that are working to facilitate all of the emerging technologies. And it's certainly AI. It's been around for quite a while. It wasn't really until ChatGPT kind of made their presence, you know, on the big stage that people started really talking about it in serious ways, making it more mainstream. But for those of us that have been in tune to it, we've been watching the development for years. And it was frustrating to see a lack of really forethought from a legislative standpoint, because it can very quickly go to the Wild West. And then you get your doomsdayers in the space that want to shut everything down. And that's terrible for innovation. So that's really what inspired me to get involved in the space, but more importantly, to lead, because you really don't have a lot of folks that can speak the language, understand it, or even utilize it. And so that's something that's important to me and my team.
No, that's great to know, Congresswoman, bringing the average age down, bringing a lot of expertise, because I think you can serve as an expert for a lot of people, because, you know, members of Congress have to, on the same day, deal with Ukraine, Gaza, border security, AI, et cetera. So it would be unfair to expect them to be an expert, but having some people like you makes a big difference. You brought up a point about how you don't want the doomsdayer to take on. How does one balance innovation, but also keeping guardrails? We want to make sure our country stays at the cutting edge, but obviously there needs to be some kind of a balance, and balance from bad things happening, but also balance from concentration, that it does not end up in the hands of a few companies like we see in social media. So your thoughts for our listeners, Congresswoman.
So a couple of things in that way. The doomsdayers mindset, it can be, I don't want to say that it's not justified, because there are legitimate concerns that we have as it relates to bias. And I mean, I think Gemini rolling out was one of the most disastrous rollouts we've seen. You know, you had a black George Washington, and, you know, I mean, people were pointing out some of the more egregious, you know, flaws in their language model. And I think it goes both ways. You have extreme bias on both sides, and you have to kind of find that sweet spot. I joke that when we are, you know, talking about these language models and the development of them, we've actually found a use for philosophy majors talking about ethics. And of course, every time I say that, there is someone who has a philosophy degree that looks at me and is like, you're kind of a jerk. it's true. We really do have to have a conversation about the ethics around building these language models. And there are real world consequences, particularly as we utilize them in the medical space and elsewhere, where there are consequences for models that have deliberate bias or a predetermined outcome. So that's something that we really need to focus on. The other element of the doomsdayer-ish type mindset, because not everybody is of that mindset, but there are legitimate concerns that need to be addressed. You see the federal government really struggling with it because there's a lack of understanding of the systems, how it works, right? People don't think in zeros and ones up here, right? And so what you have as a result is people going to their state legislatures, and then you have this patchwork of state laws that then these companies that are absolutely engaged in interstate and global commerce, right? They then have to abide by 50 different states' laws that are all over the map. And it's really scary, because we're seeing a trend across state legislatures that is moving in a direction towards more regulation, which is ultimately going to push out innovation. And from the global security standpoint, that we're in this competition with China, for example, DeepSeek is a very good example of where people are saying, oh, well, you know, it doesn't need to, you know, they did this with $5 million. Now, anyone who is involved in the industry knows very well what is going on with DeepSeek, right? But then you have this real tough push and pull going on between the state legislatures that say, well, we need to regulate the hell out of this. We need to protect our people and our industries. Then we're basically taking ourselves off the playing field, and we're allowing for players like DeepSeek and others to come into the space, which again is very, very scary from a national security standpoint. So we have to be really cognizant of that. There's something else in this space that our team is working on. Montana had a bill called Right to Compute. And I think that is a great model for a national model, really protecting the right to compute, because that's ultimately what the system is, right? And so I think that's really the position that we in the federal government need to take, and then also become a proving ground. We have a blockchain bill that we are currently working through that would require the implementation and use of blockchain. And blockchain is a great way for us to have that ledger, because everyone talks about watermarks and how are we defining what's real and what's not. I'm sorry, watermarks are not going to work, right? Anyone knows that. Anyone in the space knows that. And so utilizing technologies like blockchain is a way that we can have the federal government be a proving ground for AI technology and its use. And so it's just it's a multi-prong approach.
Sure. Well, you made some very, very important points that kind of leads to several questions. Just briefly, we've had state legislators here. I've had attorney generals from state come in. So briefly, I mean, one of the things they say, hey, the federal government is not acting, so I have to act. So that, as you pointed out, the patchwork of laws, think about big companies who have deep budgets being able to manage that. But if I'm a two-person company in Florida, in your congressional district, mm-hmm. think about managing first interest rate laws, then international laws. Now, EU has an act. So just briefly, we don't have a federal law. State says, hey, I'm jumping in. So what is the balance here, Congresswoman? That's one question. There's a few others, too.
Yeah. And this is, I mean, I'm a small government conservative, right? Constitutional mm-hmm. conservative. And I really do believe in this, the state's rights. Mm-hmm. And if there are particular issues where they feel that they must step up, they should. But AI is, as you said, I mean, it's not just interstate commerce. This is global. Mm-hmm. And so we have an obligation in the federal government to establish a national standard. And I can't tell you, I've been around the globe talking with mm-hmm. counterparts. I was in India talking with Indian officials there. I was in Italy giving a speech on AI, talking with my counterparts in the EU and respective governments. They're waiting on us to lead. And mm-hmm. our lack of leadership in the space is forcing other governments to take action, which becomes certain standards. And mm-hmm. I'll be honest, talking to a lot of the startups in the space, the EU standards scare the shit out of them. And mm-hmm. it should. Sorry, I cuss a lot. I'm from the country. Mm-hmm. The thing that is so important is that we have to protect that space, because the barrier to entry, if the regulatory environment is so extreme, mm-hmm. your startups aren't going to be able to compete. We're going to miss opportunities. And so we need to make sure we're protecting the little guys. That it's very concerning to me when OpenAI, Google, Microsoft, et cetera, show up in the space and say, we love these regulation ideas. You know, of course they want to set the terms because it's protecting the space for them. Yeah. And so that's something that we're fighting against. I think that's why maybe a national right to compute law would mm-hmm. give enough flexibility for people to compete, enter the marketplace, but mm-hmm. also level the playing field so that you're not constantly in this David and Goliath situation or having to comply with 50 different states' pieces of legislation.
Yeah. So national right to compute. One of the points you made also, Congresswoman, is an important point. You talked about DeepSeek. That kind of opens this whole conversation where AI has become a national security, a geopolitical issue. Mm-hmm. We are, as you know, there's the whole control of chips, especially going out to China. What are your mm-hmm. thoughts in terms of how AI is really front and center from a national security standpoint? You have a lot of expertise in national security.
The thing that I feel is missing in this conversation, because certainly we talk about, you know, the race to lead and innovate, you know, how we're in this race for autonomous vehicle leadership, how we're in this race on hypersonics, on quantum. What few people talk about is how we do that, and that is through energy. The energy capability in order to get this done is enormous. And let's just be honest, you're not going to do it off of solar, right? And wind. You have to have an above all approach. So you have to have a complementary energy policy that facilitates that type of compute power. Now, I love, obviously, I'm a little bit biased towards NVIDIA because, you know, there's some UF grads involved, and they've been exceptionally wonderful to my home university, University of Florida. But I love seeing the innovation in the chip space, right? And we're seeing rapid development overnight. But the number one thing I keep coming back to is we have to have a complementary energy policy in order to facilitate that. If you don't have the energy in order to produce this, you're not going to be competing. And it doesn't matter how innovative we are, how clever we are, it does not matter. So we have to have that component taken care of. We are very active in the space, both from a defense standpoint as well as a commerce space in semiconductor chips. There's a lot that needs to happen. And what we've seen to date has been more of a check the box exercise than a thoughtful approach in how can we bring domestic manufacturing into the space. And then, of course, the materials to do so. We have to have the tax policy, the energy policy. We have to have the workforce. All of that leads up into how we do this ultimately.
A comprehensive approach. And since you talked about NVIDIA, they announced a major investment in Texas and Arizona, not in Florida yet. Your thoughts?
We're working on it.
Working, absolutely. I mean, because they are today at the front and center of this discussion of AI. What are your thoughts of companies like NVIDIA saying, okay, we're going to invest tens of billions of dollars back in manufacturing in the U.S. So is the policy of the president working in terms of some of these actions of doing this? What are your thoughts of NVIDIA's announcement?
Absolutely. I mean, it's no surprise that I'm very much a supporter of President Trump and his policies. And what I had seen out of the previous administration under President Biden was an arbitrary executive order that basically scared all of the AI community because it was very cumbersome, right? And it wasn't well thought out. With the rescission of the executive order, the Biden executive order, President Trump said, we're going to lead in this space. And in his first 100 days, we've seen over $5 trillion of private investment being announced. That is huge because we know that AI is going to be the player of the future in every single industry, from healthcare to manufacturing to medical devices, pharmaceuticals, marketing. AI is here to stay. And so we have to be prepared and we have to have the infrastructure here. And of course, in Congress, as I said, we're working on these policies like an energy policy and a data privacy policy and, you know, all of these elements that really facilitate the development of the industry as a whole. So I'm very much supportive of it. I love the investments. I mean, these are long-term capital investments. And I'd say, since we're talking regulating AI, and we are the author of the RAINS Act, which is the largest regulatory reform effort in American history, it's really important that we get the regulatory environment right. And I don't know when this is airing, but today is a very big day in the regulatory space. We had a hybrid bill that we have introduced called Reclaiming the RAINS Act. It's getting marked up today in the Judiciary Committee. And it not only pulls back the regulatory authority on major rules, so $100 million or more of industry impact, pulls that back from the executive branch into Congress. So Congress, as elected officials, we have to up or down approve it. And I think that's much better for vetting these policies because these regulations have tremendous impacts. And oftentimes it's political in nature. So this will take the politics out of it. So not only does the bill do that, but then it retroactively looks back and forces every agency to look at 20% of the major rules and regulations currently on their books. And they have to send those to Congress for an up or down vote. If they don't, those regulations sunset. So that is so critical for the long-term stability of our markets. No one's going to make billions of dollars in capital investments unless there is certainty. And I think that this moment that we're going through today, it's not sexy, it's not going to get headline news, but it is going to be one of the most consequential things that happens for the next two decades, I would say.
We'll be watching for that, Congresswoman, and we'll be airing this very soon. Finally, Congressman, you've been appointed as the chair of the RSC's Emerging Tech Platform. Now, you obviously have talked about some of the things that you are very passionate about, using blockchain for, you know, instead of, different technologies, watermarking, et cetera. What are going to be some of the priorities for you in this very important role for our audience to kind of know?
So the Emerging Tech Task Force, I was so excited to be able to chair it. And we're going to have 2 years of really fast and furious work, because the emerging tech space is very exciting. It is it's the new frontier. And it's not just AI, right? It's quantum, it's hypersonics, it's nanotech, it's AR, it's VR, it's so many things. And so, as I said at the very beginning, we were talking about there's really a lack of understanding amongst the decision makers, the lawmakers of the technology. And if you don't understand, have a basic understanding of the technology, you have really no business trying to regulate it or formulate legislation around it. And so our goal is first and foremost to bring in experts and bring in the leaders of the space, different companies that are working in these respective spaces, and educate members of Congress, as well as their staff, on the technology today, but also where it's headed. And then as a task force, we're going to be developing really the suite of legislation that is going to go forward in helping facilitate these respective industries and sectors to flourish. We want to lead across the board, whether it's in autonomous vehicles, whether it's in AI, cybersecurity. It does not matter. America wants to lead and needs to lead. And so we have a very unique opportunity with a strong majority in the House and Senate, and of course, President Trump in the White House. So we have an opportunity to actually set the stage for the next 25 years.
Oh, that's fantastic. Congressman, something that came in from your district was, what role do you see AI playing in the rural communities? We all talk about all these big, sexy things, et cetera, but from an agricultural, rural community, some of the things you deal with, what is your vision for, you know, basic things that are very, very important?
Oh, gosh, there's a number of things. I mean, right off the top of my head, I do represent a heavily agricultural district. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, the AI technology in ag, it is incredible. Our farmers and ranchers were the original innovators. And it wasn't because of any other reason than survival. You had to innovate in order to survive. And so talking about new developments in the ag space, I use the See and Spray technology as a great example of this. It's about being more efficient with the resources that we have. So John Deere came out with a 20-foot boom on each side. It's incredible. I got to drive this tractor. And as you're going through the field, you have an AI system that is matched up with sensors that can, per plant, in milliseconds, determine the water level of the soil. Does it need an herbicide or a fertilizer or a pesticide? Like, it's going plant by plant. So it's individualizing the needs of every single plant in that crop, in that field. And so it's just being more efficient with resources. And again, in a time when we're dealing with inflation, we're dealing with an excessive regulatory environment, having that type of AI technology of See and Spray, it's revolutionary. It not only will help our producers to be more productive and have higher yields and less costs, but it's ultimately going to trickle down to consumers in the long run. We also see ways that AI is going to mechanize. Agriculture is heavily manual labor based. And so I've seen systems that we have AIs that are driving robotics to pick specialty crops. In a state like Florida, we have 300 specialty crops every year. This is the type of technology just in the agricultural sector that we are seeing. But then you talk about rural healthcare. There's a real lack of access in these communities. One of the ways that I see AI playing a huge role is filling some of those gaps. we have systems that now can not take the place of radiologists, but augment their services. So you can have AI reading your scans and picking up on things that may have been missed. And it's a way to really maximize someone's time and ability to see more patients. So I just think there's incredible opportunities in rural communities, not just in America, but globally. So I'm very encouraged by healthy and smart adoption in spaces and governments that are willing to actually facilitate rather than debilitate.
That's exciting because, you know, you talked about such important things, as you said, crop development and, you know, higher yields. You talked about healthcare, which is very, very critical. I mean, you basically, most people in rural areas now have a GP on their phone, so to speak, a general practitioner.
Yes.
And then think about, I'm sure you're thinking about education for every kid out there, even in small, very rural communities, the same access as somebody in, maybe even in Harvard and MIT, because now you can't access and maybe personalized education. So very, very exciting, because we talk about big things, but these are the things I think, Congressman, as you rightly pointed, that matter. So thank you so much, Congresswoman. I know how busy you are, but your insights into the complexities and necessities of AI regulation while keeping innovation going is very, very important. And we hope to speak with you again soon. And thank you to our listeners for joining us for the Regulating AI podcast. And thank you very much again for coming on, Congresswoman.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Take care.
Thanks. Have a great day. Bye.